What the hell is elder care? Hey, Jane, how are you doing?
Hey, Kate, happy 2024.
Oh, happy New Year's. Here we are again.
And welcome back to everybody. First of all, welcome back to those who have heard us during our 6 sessions last year. Welcome back to newbies. We love newbies and we hope you enjoy us.
Absolutely. So let's just go over a few things that we talked about last year.
Right. We really felt that session 5, and for those of you that listened, it was a lot of information.
I agree.
And we talked about everything from levels of care to non-paid in-home medical care to just rehab to everything. So what we thought we'd do is continue with that and do 2 sessions about caregiving and 2 different sessions about caregiving. And this is going to be our first one tonight. And you brought a wonderful gentleman with a great history of what he went through. So you take it from here, Kate.
Okay, so one thing I want to make this clear is that we're going to be talking about family and friends caregiving. We're not talking about a private agency or through the Area Agency on Aging. So we're going to talk about, you know, caregiving, and that caregiving is really unpaid help from family and friends. And it really gives the elderly person or your loved one the opportunity to remain independent in their homes. So for most families, caregiving comes naturally. And with that being said, I'd like to introduce David Higge, who was a caregiver along with his sister for his parents. David?
Thank you very much, Kate. I'll start at the end and then work backwards, really. But my parents passed away. They were 93 and 92 years old. Up until their mid-80s, they were very healthy, very active. They lived in the town where I grew up, Bradford, Pennsylvania, which is about 3 hours away from here. And my siblings all lived generally in the Pittsburgh area. That's just how it worked out as we chose our careers. So as my parents started to age, and I'm reminded of the Bonnie Raitt song Nick of Time, when it says you watch your parents, your elders' bodies change, and they were the ones that would never get sick. They were never going to die. They were always going to be there. Right. But you watch this change in their bodies and their health.
Mm-hmm.
So as we, my siblings and I, started to see that, and we were making more and more visits up to Bradford to check in on them. They had a lot of friends there, but the unfortunate part of that was a lot of their friends were passing away while they were still healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So we became, in essence, the caregivers.
Mm-hmm.
We noticed things that were changing in their health that I'm sure that they recognized it, but they didn't want to admit to it. And my father started to develop, well, he first got spinal stenosis,
mm-hmm.
but was one of those ones that didn't want to take any pain medication or anything. Well, as the spinal stenosis got worse, we saw other things happening with him because of just that pain and everything that he was experiencing. So, got the spinal stenosis, macular degeneration set in. Again, body changing, health changing.
Well, David, could you just explain about macular degeneration for our listeners?
Well, I'm not.
Right.
I'm not a doctor, I didn't stay at Holiday Inn Express last night. But it just was a very, very, very slow process of his vision diminishing.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me think of the one time that my sister and I were there in Bradford, And my dad was at the dining room table, and he had like three big magnifying lights and there, and he's trying to balance his checkbook.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat there and I looked at that and I saw him struggling, and I said, "Well, Dad, would you like me to begin to take care of your finances?" And that was really my introduction to what I would call today caregiving. And I thought he was going to say no way, because that was one thing he was very proud of, his mm-hmm. finances, and he paid attention to it all the time, and MSNBC and all those things. But he said, "Oh, that would be such a big help." So that was where I started.
Mm-hmm.
My brother and my sister and I, on numerous occasions, would have conversations with both of my parents about moving down to Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
And I can still remember my father, in one of the last conversations I had with him, he said, "No, I've talked to your mother about that, and we don't think that we need to take a step like that until there's a problem." Well, there was a problem.
Right.
And but, you know, people have pride, and mm-hmm. and they had a lot of pride that we can take care of it. You know, mm-hmm. we're okay. And so that was like all of our kind of wake up call.
Right.
To, boy, they really need more help. But again, we were a distance away. So, you know, things continued to go on. My dad's vision continued to decline. And then we started noticing dementia creeping up. I mean, it was a very slow process. But when you get asked the same questions two or three times in a half hour period, you think, you know, there's something going on here. My mother, on the other hand, was seemingly very healthy, and then she got into a car accident and was, boy, out of commission, in the hospital, in rehabilitation care for, oh boy, I don't know how long, 3 or 4 months maybe. It was a pretty serious accident that she had. So that is when her period of decline started. So, you know, we're, you know, making more and more trips up there, trying to make the house a little bit safer. We would remove all the area rugs mm-hmm. and try to hide them. But then the next time one of us went up, all the area rugs were back out in the house.
Yeah.
So so then, you know, my dad's health continued to decline. He went into a nursing type care in Bradford, and then he never went back home.
Okay.
Because things were just happening. I think his heart was starting to become affected and a lot of those things.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, can I just ask a question? Now, because you had your well parent have the accident and out of commission, did your dad stay at home alone when your mom was rehabbing all those months?
He did. He did. And we were another example of the type of caregiving. His macular degeneration got to a point where he was starting to receive shots mm-hmm. in the eye
mm-hmm.
to try to slow the
process.
Yeah, the damage with the eyes.
Right.
Well, he couldn't drive there because he couldn't drive back home.
Mm-hmm.
So one of us would make the trip up there and make sure he got to the eye doctor, got back home, and we'd spend a day or two there. But we just felt somewhat guilty because, you know, we were so far away and we couldn't provide the type of care that we wanted to. But we, one of us, we had a great team effort. And I don't know how people can do this, like, individually. Like, say, a lone, only child or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But my siblings and I, you know, we were constantly communicating about it. We were making sure that somebody got up there to visit. Somebody was there to get to doctor appointments, those types of things. So, you know, how, thankfully we had that kind of, you know, multiple caregivers in that situation. But so then it got to a point where they really just couldn't live at home anymore. Mm-hmm. And you can't, you know, you can't just, like when we were kids or when we had our kids, you just throw them in the car seat and you go and they don't have a say in it. Well, right. Your parents, they have a say in it. The house where my parents lived in, my mother had lived in that house for all but about 5 years of her life. Her father had built it. They, my parents had lived there. They raised all of us kids there. And they don't want to leave. Mm-hmm. But it comes to a point where they really have to. And we as children had to have that discussion with them. And there was a lot of, you know, arguing back and forth. But we finally found a place in Pittsburgh near where my sister lived so she could make regular visits there. And then my brother and I, we would get there a couple times during the week or always on the weekends, just so they, you know, they had somebody there. Mm-hmm. But it was a assisted living center. And then my father eventually went into skilled nursing and he passed away. My mother was there by herself. She felt very lonely. But that was that it, we were there more and more regularly as the child, but also the caregiver. So right. You're kind of playing a dual role there. Mm-hmm. Sometimes difficult, you know, sometimes a little easier than others. But she also started to develop dementia, also started to develop macular degeneration. And so that was after my father passed away that she really started to decline. So that caregiving went on. But it was probably a caregiving period of 5 or 6 years mm-hmm. Before they both passed away. So it is a challenge, mm-hmm. but it's also payback time that, hey, they took care of us all those years. It's time for you to, you know, step up to the plate and do your thing, because their friends, they were the winners. I mean, a lot of their friends, real close friends, passed away, and they were there kind of by themselves. Mm-hmm. And you can see how that impacts, I think, their lives too, mm-hmm. because that comfort zone isn't there anymore.
Well, their own mortality comes into play.
It does.
They're yeah. right. And they just lose. They have a loss and they have grief there, right. And then their own mortality and mm-hmm. and I was listening to everything that you said, and their independence, realistic or unrealistic, and their pride, mm-hmm. and that's what the caregivers had to, just your dad's comment, well, we don't have to really do anything till there's a problem, and your car accident, and I'm mm-hmm. thinking, Dave, was the problem, and that mm-hmm. was
mm-hmm. yeah, you know. that was the problem, and again the eyesight, he's not able to, you know, even, you know, take care of his finances, and can't, you know, they lose their driver's license, they're not able to drive,
right.
So again, another level of independence taken away from them. Mm-hmm. So they become, well, one, very dependent on each other, but then who else are they going to depend on? There has to be more there. And I think that's where the caregiver role really kicks in.
Well, I think you did give them time. Like, you were on their time until you felt that it was, okay, this is now a safety issue here.
Yeah.
We need to make a decision. And it sounded to me like the family came together. I mean, there's always going to be, you know, families not always agreeing, but it sounds like you all made the right decision for them both.
Oh, yeah. I think so, too. Yeah. I mean, you know, as a son, as a possible caregiver, I have no regrets, and I don't think my siblings do either.
Right.
And I don't mean to make light of it, but some of these times the funny stories are what make a point. But I was up there visiting one weekend, and I was there for 2, maybe 3 days. And this was after my father passed away. And my it wouldn't have been that. He was in the nursing facility in Bradford, and she was at home. Well, we were very concerned. So we got one of those first alert mechanisms that if they fall...
Lifeline things.
Right, yeah, if it alerts somebody.
Sure.
So I was there, and I just left the house, and I was on my way back to Pittsburgh, and my phone rings, and it's my sister. She said, I just got one of those notices that mom has fallen. Can you go back home and see what's going on? So I turned around, I'm on my way back, and I got another call from my sister and said, well, I called and I talked to mom, and all she had to say was, I didn't fall, and she hung up the phone. So again, it gets back to that independence type thing.
I'm not going to tell you.
No, I'm not going to tell you. I don't want you, you know, worrying about me. Well, no, we do worry. We worry a lot. And so you just run into some of those situations. Yeah. But, you know, right up until the day they passed away, again, that team effort was there. You know, my mother had different needs than my father, but we were there for whatever they needed as that, you know, family caregiver.
As you and your siblings were providing that personal care in the home, exhaustion?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Exhaustion, frustration, kind of there are times when there's a very helpless feeling because you want to be able to do something.
Right.
You're just not sure what it is. Sometimes your offer to help is accepted. Sometimes it isn't. There's certain regret involved as that process goes along.
Right.
But you just do the best you can. And the situation, conditions are going to change, but you just stay focused on it, and you have conversations with your parents, but as time goes on, it's more and more difficult to have those conversations,
right?
Because there is that dementia involved
sitting
there.
In.
And I learned between the two of them, there's no one version of dementia. They both handled that very, very differently. Fortunately, didn't get to one of those situations where they kind of become angry and
hit
the world and at you and agitated. But it got to a point where it was changing on almost a daily basis. You just sit there and you listen and you ask questions, and you know you know it's never going to get any better than it was that day,
right?
Which is, as children, is difficult to deal with, but you deal with it.
Yeah,
you just said such a key thing. When you're in it and you're having a bad day, or you're haven't seen something, and you go up for one of your visits and you see how different it is, when you actually sit there and say, this isn't going to get any better. And what happened to me was both parents at one time ill. Oh my God, this is only going to end with me losing my parents, because it doesn't get... And that reality to me, even as a healthcare provider, was like, oh dear God.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, I wanted to ask you, just out of curiosity, the three of you, were you all still actively working?
Yes.
See, that's another thing.
That's a whole
balance in your life.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Fortunately, when all this was going on, as I said, the assisted living center was right near where my sister lived. She was working. But she, you know, either on her way home from work or on her way to work, she would stop by, even if it was for 10 or 15 minutes, you know, how you doing, what do you need, just to make sure that they had somebody. I was working probably about 15 minutes from there, so I would get off work, you know, a couple of days a week and go out there and visit with them. My brother was working full-time. He's an attorney, so he would mostly go out on the weekends and make sure. But we kind of each had our role in the process. I was taking care of their finances. I was paying their bills. Anything related to their finances, I was taking care of. My sister was just, you know, the daily, I mean, I don't mean to minimize it, but the daily check-in. Mm-hmm. And then she would report back, you know, I went and saw Mom and Dad today, you know, this, that. So you kind of knew what to expect then the next time you went out. And my brother, being an attorney, did a lot of the legal work. Mm-hmm. I mean, because there was real estate involved, or there was, you know, wills, and you kind of had to look at the wills, and you knew that both they were starting to lose their mind. I mean, mm-hmm. the workings of their mind. So he did a lot of that work there, but he would get out on the weekends to visit. And that's a whole, you know, it's almost a whole other subject, but the whole situation of the, is everything in order from a legal standpoint? You know, do you have all that work done? If you don't, do whatever you can, when you can, and get that all, I mean, know where it is. You know, make sure you understand it. Make sure you have an attorney that you can deal with. And I think that's all part of the caregiver's role, to make sure that's all taken care of.
Absolutely. Kate and I would be very rich women if we had money every time we brought up an elder care attorney or an attorney that's trusted within your family. Mm-hmm. You know, right. But can I ask a question? Did you have to sell the house, the real estate, your mom's?
Yes, we did.
Was that hard on all of you too?
It was. Oh, absolutely. Because we had all grown up there. Right. Mm-hmm. And although we didn't know our grandfather who designed and built the house, but we knew it was, you know, his house. And then my mother's home, and lived there all that time. So yeah, it was difficult. It was maybe more difficult cleaning it out. difficult on one end, because that was, you know, your home. That was where you grew up.
Memories.
And on the other hand, when we got my parents to say, okay, we're going to move down to Pittsburgh. Well, we went up to start to pack everything. And my mother said she had done some packing. Well, we got up there, and as my sister describes it, it looked like she was just getting ready to get out of the grocery store, and she was going to Pittsburgh and never returning. But she had not really done anything. So the just going through all of those, you know, memories that are in the house, it was difficult on everybody. It was difficult on her. I'm not sure she really ever recovered from leaving her home. Mm-hmm. And truly her home.
But she lost her spouse, she lost her home, she lost her independence, and she was starting to maybe realize she was forgetful.
She knew what was going on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Enough. I don't like to mention, they become afraid of what's happening.
It was hard. Yeah. I think, Kate, I agree with you. I think fear is a very big thing there.
Yep.
Fear of the unknown. I mean, everybody has a fear of the unknown, but I think as you do age and you come face to face with your own, you know, mortality, that I think fear is a big factor in that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how to you know, mitigate that.
Well, exactly. I think one of the things that I wanted to mention was that with caregiving, I mean, when we go into the home to help our loved ones, it's important that we do not all of a sudden become the parent. We have to watch our boundaries and respect them for who they are. Yeah. You agree? I mean, it sounds like that's exactly what you and your siblings did.
I agree with you 100%. I mentioned that we would have those conversations about moving and not going to do it until there's a problem.
Right.
And you just, you know, you grit your teeth and you bite your tongue and okay. But then you go back for another bite of the apple, maybe, you know, a couple, two, three, 4 weeks later, and you get the same response. But, okay, I understand. A lot of pride, a lot of independence, and you just...
You know, I applaud you.
I agree.
Let me tell you, in more ways than one, as another caregiver, long distance, I applaud you, but... I will tell you professionally, Kate Winstack, like she's so much younger than me, but she isn't. But you know, I mean, I did social work and clinical intervention crisis work for 40 years, and I will tell you, the bulldozing that people that the children do, that you would be appalled knowing how you had to handle it. They bulldoze. There's no other word, Kate. And they just, well, I'm going to go and just tell mother how it's going to be.
Wow.
Or you know what the big line is? I am the power of attorney. Nobody's declared anybody incompetent, but we're going to go in and barge in with the power of attorney. And I would say to individuals, you're going to be incredibly unsuccessful. Could we approach it in a different way? I don't have time. Nobody had time.
Mm-hmm.
The world got busy on us, apparently, Dave, and nobody had time to respect and look at it from your parents' viewpoint, but the three of you did, and that's incredible.
Yeah. I think the key word that you used there, and I agree with you 100%, but it's respect.
Mm-hmm.
It's the love and respect that you need to show them. You have to respect what they're desires are too. And if it gets to the point where, you know, the problem is there, it's here, it's right in front of you, it's time to act, well, then you act. But you know, you would have liked to have had that be a little bit different. But
well, know. And Kate and I have always said it's hard and it's not always successful to make the decisions in a crisis, you know, but sometimes you have to respect parents and spouses and all that feel you need to wait for that problem and crisis before you go forward.
Right. Even if your parent's not agreeable at that time, it's good that you as the caregiver have a plan available, understanding the resources that are out there for you. Because if there is a crisis, you know, you want to be empowered. You want to have that ability to say, well, I know, to the medical staff, I know exactly where we want him to go or her to go because you've done your research.
We started looking into facilities even before there was the, quote, problem.
Right.
And fortunately, so we had a plan to move forward when the time came that we knew was going to come.
Right.
And probably sooner rather than later.
Yeah, so I think that you did an excellent job. You and your family,
right.
Your siblings did a great job because, you know, I agree with the steamrolling of people coming in and making changes immediately on their parents' lives, and they're just trying to deal with what? What are you saying? What's going on? I always tell my clients to take a deep breath and don't just run into the house and say, guess what? I'm going to be the caregiver. Or I'm hiring the caregiver. Right. And this is how it's going to go, because you're taking away something that they hold near and dear to their heart. So you do, even though you know it's a horrible situation that they're falling and things are not going right, but they're still with us, right? They're still alert and oriented. You have to present it in a different way, not as a being their parent, but still being their child and being respectful of what's going on. So
all three of us talking, all of us, if I'm not mistaken, you actually said it, when you love and you respect and you do good decision-making inclusive of the individuals, you don't have regrets, Dave. And that is so different from people that have regrets and I shoulda, woulda, coulda.
Mm-hmm.
And those people can't even grieve properly,
right?
Because they have too many regrets. We could grieve loss that may be a normal aging loss of yours in the 90s and problems, but whatever age, there's no healthy grieving.
No.
When they don't follow what could have been a better plan, and you had a plan.
I mean, I was going over caregiving with my sister today, and at the time, my dad had died at 67. My mom was alive and then had a lot of heart issues. And my sister and I kind of divided our roles too. Now, I was a mom with young kids. My sister was working full time. She was 45 minutes away from me and still a distance from my sister. But we respected her. And periodically, I would say to my mom, you know, what about moving to a senior high rise closer to me? I'm not ready yet, Kathleen. I knew I was always in trouble when she said that. And so we took our time, you know, with her. And, you know, my mom eventually had passed away without going into any community. But my sister reminded me of when I was growing up, my grandmother lived with us, and so did my Down syndrome aunt. And when my grandmother suffered a stroke in our home, she came back from Harmerville, and my sister and I helped to care for her at a very young age. We were young.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were in our teens. We were in there helping to bathe my grandmother, helping her with moving her leg. I mean, even at a young age, we learned how to be caregivers. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And how to respect, you know.
Right.
Well, let me ask you this as a caregiver. Do you or your sister think you resented that, or was it just something you did because that's what you felt you needed to do for your grandmother? Because some people resent, regardless of what age they have to start caregiving.
I mean, I don't want to sound like we're the goody two-shoes family here, but I have to tell you is that it just came naturally to my sister and I. There was no regret at all. My father used to pick up my grandmother and place her in the bathtub. And she would be covered, and there was, you know, he respected her modesty and everything. So I have to say that neither one of us, we loved her dearly. I mean, the woman made us homemade pies, bread, cakes, you know, every day after school. So we had great respect for her and wanted her to get back to where she could be and feeling like she had a life again. So,
well, as I was growing up, I could never imagine that I would ever be in a position where I would be assisting my father to go to the bathroom.
Right.
But when that situation comes, you don't think twice about it because of who they are and the relationship that you have as, well, I need to take care of him in this situation. Mm-hmm. And you do it without a second thought. But who would have thought that when you were... Well, you experienced it, Kate, very early, but, you know, that's just part of the process that you go through. It's not fun.
No.
You're definitely not doing this for enjoyment, you know. You're doing it because it needs to be done. And who better to do it than, you know, the children of who you're helping, so.
Right. I agree. So, you know, we had talked about when you become a caregiver, some things that you really need to consider before you make that commitment, right? And I would say that when you were thinking about becoming a caregiver and your siblings, were you all thinking about how are you going to be able to balance work life and your personal life? And did you think about that at all?
No.
Okay.
Only because it got to a point where it needed to be done, and who better to do it than family members?
Right.
So, you know, you step up.
Exactly.
You know, you put on the big boy pants, so to speak, and you step up and you get it done.
I agree. And then, you know, the other thing of it is that you had three siblings. So when one was feeling exhausted, you knew that the other sibling was right there to help you out.
Oh, absolutely.
That's good. Yeah,
we were in, I mean, some of that may begin with the relationship that you have before you get put in this situation, but we communicated very regularly. We all knew what was going on, and you know, hey, I've got an appointment. I've got to take care of it tomorrow. Could you help out? You know, mm-hmm. the answer was always yes.
Great. Mm-hmm. So, some other things that you really need to consider is that, are you able to provide that care to your family member? You know, if a family member needs a Hoyer lift, are you able to help out with that? If your family member has an NG tube or a G tube, can you help out with that? I know you, that's wonderful. You didn't have to experience
that.
But there are families out there that, and they need to make sure that they're aware that they are willing to take that on. Don't you agree?
I agree. And I think when you get into those situations with NG tubes and Hoyers, that's when you can really have a home care insurance covered visits for education and support in the home. But the family's still going to have the brunt of that. But
right.
You would go ahead and be able to benefit from that at that point.
Right, like wound care. You can
Correct.
Bring in home care
right.
in to help out with that, exactly.
PT, OT, whatever. Okay, yeah.
So another thing is, in regards to becoming a caregiver, is to really think about your own health and what kind of toll it's going to take on your health and your mental health. Did you ever experience that?
Outside of just, you know, the stress of not you know, going to visit or taking care of things, it's more really the stress of what you know is coming down the road.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're involved in it, you're helping out, but you know, you pull away from the assisted living center and you've got tears coming down your cheeks because not of the situation that they're in. They're very happy or seemingly happy with that situation. But you also know that this is the beginning of the end. So I think that was more the stress than or the, you know, anxiety or whatever than the caregiving aspect. But fortunately, we didn't have some of those situations you were talking about, Kate,
mm-hmm.
where you almost become a physician's assistant in
right.
dealing with wounds
right.
or any other health issues like that.
Sure. Now, I know families that are doing that right now, taking care of their loved ones and making sure that they're on oxygen is okay or their IV is going all right. And my last one, and I think this is the key, is that making sure that your loved one wants you to be their caregiver. They're agreeable to it. You just can't come barging in and saying, I'm going to be your caregiver. This is how it's going to be. It might take time,
mm-hmm.
right? Slow the process. You know, make sure that they're on the same page as you are. It's that communication.
Well, and addressing that issue, Kate, you know, Dave, your dad, so willingly letting you take over, you didn't know how burdened that task was for him, and he was so willing versus other people that are in denial of a lot of things. They're the ones that push away and say, I don't want you to be a caregiver. See, your dad was sort of willing and relieved.
Mm-hmm.
Relieved.
Yes, and surprisingly too, because that's what he did, you know, and I was very surprised, but I was very thankful because I don't know what it would have come to had he not said, yeah, that's a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we'd like to wrap it up and thank you so much.
Thank you,
David, for everything.
I commend the two of you for taking on this venture that you have because, as I told you in the beginning, you know, off the recording, I wish I knew 5 years ago what I know today just by listening mm-hmm. to this podcast and kind of knowing what to expect as we go down the road here. So thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
It was a true pleasure.
Thank you.
To have you here and sharing your parents with us.
Absolutely. So Jane, why don't you go ahead and talk about part two?
Oh, okay. Part two. This is a little bit of a personal part two. My niece Nancy, who is the only daughter of my sister-in-law Carol, who passed away in September of 2022, she's going to share a little bit about the Dave went through the system, you know, from aging in place at home into an assisted living, and then shared a little bit about the nursing home with your dad. Nancy navigated from being in her own home for over 5 years to an emergency placement, to my sister-in-law having dementia, not being able to abide by the rules during COVID, and having to be removed, and another placement. And over 6 to 7 years, this went on. And I think she hit just about every single thing. And I was fortunate enough that the agency Gallagher Hospice that I was working for actually cared for her at the end of life because of a fall that she had in a memory care unit. But I thought, just like Dave, Nancy could share her story a little bit with some folks too, mm-hmm. because Nancy had been frustrated. I was frustrated. We couldn't go out or talk to one another without having to discuss her mother, you know, and she didn't know what to do. And just the first day that she left the assisted living and how she felt, she had some pretty remarkable times. So she'll be joining us next time.
Well, I look forward to it.
Thank you. Do you want to do any quotes on aging tonight?
You know, I forgot mine, so go ahead.
Well, let me tell you what I did, you know, only because, and Dave, you're surrounded by women, I was a little gender biased and was always quoting a Betty White or Eleanor Roosevelt or somebody. So listen to this. I thought this was fascinating for people. Two young men whose lives were taken from them had aging quotes. The first one was Abraham Lincoln, and the second was John Lennon, and the similarities of how their lives ended. But listen to this. I thought this was interesting. Abraham Lincoln was quoted at an event stating, "In the end, it's not the years that you've had in your life. It's the life that you've put into your years." That's an actual Abraham Lincoln quote. Mm-hmm. You know, so that was one. Now, John Lennon, and I know people can say whatever they want about John Lennon, but he did have an aging quote. "Count your age by friends, not by years. Count your life by smiles, never by tears."
Mm. Well, that's perfect.
So I just thought that those two were sort of cool from young men whose lives were taken from them that didn't get into 70s, 80s, and they would have loved our podcast, Kate.
Absolutely.
I think I just think John Lennon would have gone crazy for us.
Well, Jane, we're going to say goodbye, and we'll be back again, and we'll do part two of caregiving. So thank you very much for listening. We appreciate it, and stay tuned.
Thank you, Kate. Dave, again, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
See you next time, viewers.